Hey there, and welcome to the WCET Frontiers Pod, where we explore practical solutions and innovations for digital learning in higher ed. I'm your host, Lindsay Downs. I'm the Assistant Director of Communications and Community with WCET.
For today's episode, I'm happy to bring you my conversation with
Tina Parscale and Erica Swain,
our recent winner of the Duke Johnson and Molly McGill Award. Tina Parscale, she's the Associate Vice Chancellor for CCC Online and Academic Affairs for the Colorado Community College System, CCCS. Tina is a true leader in digital learning higher education.
Tina is an avid supporter of us here at WCET. She served on our steering committee and on the WCET Executive Council. She has been and continues to be a member of working groups. She's given her time and expertise to a lot of our projects, presentations, webcasts, webinars, events, and papers, and more. Our other guest today, Erica Swain, who is our winner of the Sally Johnstone Award. Erica is the Assistant Director for Compliance and Authorization at the University of Colorado Boulder and Associate Director of State Authorization at the University of Colorado System. Erica is a leader within WCET's division, the State Authorization Network, or SAN. She volunteers regularly and serves on the SAN Advisory Group. She leads the SAN Professional Licensure Special Interest Team, and she shares her advice, her humor, and her resources with the SAN and the WCET member communities all the time. She is always eager to contribute and collaborate and make us laugh. We frequently rely on her expertise to round out our programming. Her contribution to WCET and to digital learning is certainly outsides and exceeds the outstanding professional ranks that she has achieved. I am just truly excited that I got to have this conversation with Tina and Erica. It was incredibly fun. And let's get to it.
Hey, I'm so thrilled to continue our WCET Award podcast series here on WCET Frontiers Podcast. And I am also thrilled about the two guests who won our two individual awards this year. Ladies, can you introduce yourselves and tell us about your role? And we'll have a wonderful conversation today. Tina, do you want to go first?
Great. Yes, thank you. Hello, I'm Tina Parscale, and I currently serve as the Associate Vice Chancellor for CCC Online and Academic Affairs for the Colorado Community College System. I've been in this particular role since 2019, and previously I served as the Executive Director of CCC Online since 2015. In this role, I get to work with an amazing team. We provide online teaching and learning services to the 13 colleges in the Colorado Community College System as part of our consortium, which is Colorado Community Colleges Online, soon to be Colorado Online Act Consortium, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. My team includes such areas as academic affairs, academic technology, library, OER, business services, learning design, work with amazing folks across the state. Every day is different and unique, which is fantastic. In this role, I work with an amazing team to provide online teaching and learning services to 13 colleges in the Colorado Community College System. My team includes such areas as academics, academic technology, business services, library, and OER, learning design, and they're amazing. And they serve our students with dedication and resilience and a real passion for equity and the mission of the community colleges.
Well, thanks for being here, Tina. Erica.
Hi, Lindsay. Thanks. I am Erica Swain. I am the Assistant Director for Compliance and Authorization at the University of Colorado Boulder and the Associate Director for State Authorization for the University of Colorado System. So at Boulder, I oversee compliance with state authorization and CSERA policies, but I also work and have a major role in compliance with accreditation-relevant federal regulations and our accreditation work. So I get to pop into other various offices on campuses and work on things like creating a common curriculum, our assessment planning, and working and growing our online distance education and other types of alternative modalities across campus, which is fantastic, working on policies and the like. For the system office, I actually advise the campuses, so I do get the interesting opportunity to advise myself, which is super fun. But I do get to advise all three campuses on state authorization compliance, along with the weird other interconnectedness. I know a lot of times with state authorization, we think of it as kind of a solitary thing, but there are overlaps with some federal issues and overlaps with accreditation issues. So I do get to kind of help keep them abreast of those situations. So it's really great. And much like Tina, I work with some amazing people both on my campus and across the system. And it's a really, really unique environment and I really enjoy it.
Yeah, wow. You know, it's just a real testament to what makes a great leader, I think, is their ability to really bring out the best in their teams. And everything I know about you both personally and everything that we've heard about from others that have worked with you or have seen the work you've done, you know, you guys are wonderful leaders and you do just that. You have excellent people you get to work with and you've both had such an impact on the WCET community. You are always there to help and give a helping hand in the SAN discussions or the WCET main discussions. And so it was pretty easy for us this year to pick you both for our individual awards. So this year, or I guess last year, technically, we awarded Tina with the Dick Johnson and Molly McGill Award. And that's given each year to an individual who has made a significant contribution to the digital learning community and to WCET. And Erica received the Sally M. Johnstone Award. This year, I think it was more poignant maybe than other years because it was the year that Sally retired. So it was wonderful that she was the one that was able to present that to Erica. It recognizes a professional who is really up and coming and out there and recognized for thought leadership and excellent in practice and demonstrated leadership capabilities. So congratulations to you both and thank you for everything that you've done for our community.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. And it was so fun to be able to surprise you both at the award ceremony this year. Hard to keep it quiet. Every time we'd see you, it'd be like,
it was one of those moments where all I could think was, so this is why everybody was so nice to me the last few days.
Oh, our celebrities in the house. Don't act different. Don't act different. Okay.
I recall thinking, I want to meet that person.
Tina, meet Tina. Today, I really wanted to just chat a little bit with both of you as well now WCET award winners and amazing practitioners in the field, great community members and role models, about your career and the challenges that you're tackling right now and tips you have for other aspiring WCET award winners. So how did you guys get to this point in your career? Can you chat a little bit about that with us?
Yeah, I have to admit, I laugh when people go and they poke on my LinkedIn all the time because all I can think is they look at it, they're looking and saying, what in the world? Many, many moons ago in the before time, I was moving to Chicago and I needed a job. This was back before you really couldn't apply online. You had to send in the paper because I'm 800 years old. No. And I needed a job and I applied to this place that I'd never heard of before in an industry doing what I had never heard of. Who's ever heard of the Higher Learning Commission? Mm-hmm. And right? Who are they? What's this accreditation stuff? And I applied. They had an open position. I had just quit graduate school because medieval studies wasn't going to really take me anywhere. And I wasn't doing real well in Latin. And I became an administrative assistant. I ended up staying there for 9 years, moving my way up and through, working with some fantastic folks, learning what accreditation was. After about 9-10 years, I had gone to the point where I was director of the peer core. So working with the evaluators, training the evaluators that go out on the team visits, you know, my team internally and I building those teams. So which was an interesting point in my interview when I came to CU Boulder, because for their previous accreditation visit, I had actually built their team, which was fun. I decided after a number of years that maybe I was done with accreditation. And I ran back to New York State and I became the registrar for North Country Community College up in the Adirondacks, one of the SUNY institutions. And it was great and it was fun. And I was, you know, being a registrar after working in accreditation was an interesting transition, but it was a lot of the same regulatory issues, and it was great. And after about a year and a half, 2 years, I got a call from a friend of mine at Middle States and said, hey, I'm leaving. Can you send me your resume? And I thought, well, we'll see what happens. So anyway, after 6 years at Middle States, where I went back into accreditation land, and I was there for 6 years. I was the director for training, again, training evaluators, training institutions on how to work within the standards for accreditation, overseeing and managing the compliance with accreditation relevant federal regulations, working on that verification process with institutions, taking everything that I learned from my time at HLC, everything that I learned from my time as a registrar, and helping institutions find that way to really meld those things together. And then it got to a point where, you know, something else needed to happen. I didn't know what. And so I took some time to myself, worked a little bit with a friend of mine who owns a wine bar in Philadelphia. That was a blast, but couldn't figure out what I wanted to do. I couldn't leave education. I couldn't leave higher ed behind. I kept getting calls from other friends at other schools. Can you help us with this? We're working through that. And I realized I didn't want to leave this kind of strange world and that I worked in. And wouldn't you know it, after a lunch with a friend of mine who said, well, have you looked at all in Colorado? Literally 2 weeks later, this position came open.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really strange. And I came out, interviewed, and here I am. And I've been super lucky that I found a position that allows me to take everything I've ever done before and apply it in a single use case scenario. And so I'm able to take all of that and just work on stuff that I actually enjoy, but I've literally spent my entire career doing. And it's been fabulous because I've had amazing, you know, amazing mentors and amazing friends along the way that I'm still allowed to, you know, I still am allowed. I can still contact at any time and say, hey, I'm doing this. I remember seeing this. Am I right? And I think that's a really unique and interesting aspect about this. You don't see that. And I do get a people from time to time who ask me, you know, how did you manage? How is it that you do this? Like, how did you manage this? And all I could say is, it's been just a unique experience after another. And it's just continuously unique positions coming open and having the ability to go after them, which has been fantastic.
A little bit of serendipity.
Yes. Yes.
I enjoy hearing the different routes that people take throughout their career and their personal lives. And it's really neat to hear a story where, like you said, everything led to you being in something that you can use it, build upon what you've learned before. So that's pretty cool. Tina.
So much of what you said, Erica, really resonates for me also. You know, as they say, a career is seldom a straight line, and mine certainly had lots of windy twists and turns along the way. I started in online in 1996. I know I'm dating myself. And it was funny because I was actually the school director of a real estate school at the time for the Colorado Association of Realtors. And I knew about school operations. I had worked in another environment. And real estate was like the top of the list of things I knew nothing about. But I knew how to work within the Colorado Department of Private Occupational Schools. I understood faculty development. I understood all those things. So I hung out with the Colorado Realtors for a while. And then I saw a job posting for a program director, which then turned into a dean for one of the very first online graduate schools. It was nationally accredited by then DETC, now DEAC. And I said, I take computers. That sounds fun. Try that for a little while. And I ended up being there for 6 years. It was the International School of Information Management, became the academic dean, and really enjoyed, you know, we had two master's degrees, one an MBA and a master's of information technology. And I knew at that time I had a bachelor's in social sciences, or I had a master's in social sciences and women's studies and education. And at that point, I really was interested in working with some of the instructional designers that I hired. And I thought, that's really cool work. I want to learn more about that. So, and I also knew academically that very seldom a straight line. I thought, you know, if I want to stay in academia and I found my place, I probably should get some more academic street cred. So I actually stepped down from a dean position and went to work at Regis University as a faculty member. And it was the coolest job because I got to do faculty development and I had a teaching load. I was also the assistant director of distance learning. And while I was working on my PhD in instructional design, and that was just huge fun. I left there and went to Colorado State University Global Campus and helped them stand that up. I was there for a year as a program director. And then from there, I met the president of the University of Rockies, Dr. Charlita Shelton. And I said, I want to work with that woman. She is a force. And I didn't really think I was going to go back into the for-profit space, but I did. And loved my time. I was the director of academic quality, and then found myself in the provost role. They had a large online program, so I was able to really apply my online learning chops, but develop what I was learning in terms of academic affairs for my time at Regis at Colorado State University Global. And then from there, as you talk about serendipity, I was actually at Dr. Shelton's Christmas party, and I met the person who was the executive director of CCC Online. And I said to him, I said, your job's posted. Where are you going? Did you get promoted? He's like, no, I'm leaving. And I said, oh, I have a friend. He's like, no. You should talk to them. I think you think you'd have a blast. They're a great group. So I'm like, okay, consider it. Then the rest is history. I've been here for a little over 7 years and having a blast because every day is different. I get to work with, as you said, having both, you know, the institutional focus and the system focus. Erica, it's interesting that we both kind of have that ability to kind of live in both worlds, because in addition to CCC Online, I do a lot system-wide in academic affairs as well. And so being able to have that versatility and that variety in the actual work that we do is super enriching and exciting. So it's fun.
Oh, wow. Wow. I mean, you know, I actually thought the same thing with that. Both of you have such an interesting perspective and view, being in kind of that dual role that you're in. That's kind of, that's really unique. Again, with the serendipity. Wow, we put you both together in a podcast. Wow, this, I'm going to have to make that into the title or something. Thank you both for talking about your background and kind of what led you to this point. Thinking kind of about your histories and your background, what was kind of something that was important that you've learned over the course of your career that you'd like to share?
So I could start. So when I was a faculty member at Regis, I, as I mentioned, I had a really neat opportunity to be both faculty and administration. Regis is really good about cultivating expertise and cultivating professional development amongst their staff. And they had a fantastic, I think they still have it, a mentoring program. And I've been a mentor to individuals, and 1 year I decided I want to be a protege. I want to be a mentee, I think is the term that they used. And you had to write a proposal. So I wrote a proposal that I wanted to get a mentor, and I wanted it to be one of the associate vice president, an amazing woman. And Joan Buckley is her name. She's amazing. She was an associate vice president. I said, I want to be paired with her because I have an idea I want to pitch to the provost about how to bring together a Center for Teaching and Learning and the Center for Academic Technology and the Distance Learning Unit. And in her wisdom, she actually paired me with the provost. So I got to spend and at this point, I had no dream of being a provost.
Oh, wow.
Talk about serendipity, right? So I got to spend the year with Dr. Alan Service, who was the provost at the time, and an amazing thought leader. And I asked him as I was kind of going through this process, why are you spending your time with me when I'm just a faculty member? And he said, we are coming up on an accreditation visit for HLC. And one of the areas I want to learn more about is distance learning. And I said, well, that's funny because I want to learn more about governance and accreditation. So we had an amazing year together. But one of the lessons he taught me has just really resonated with me. He had a saying, dribble that ball for a while. And as we started to unpack that is, Later, I had I read that good leaders don't rush, meaning take your time. It's a very Ignatian thing, a very Regis thing, to really do the discernment process and get inputs, and often get inputs like Abraham Lincoln and a team of rivals, people with divergent opinions. Don't only talk to people who agree with you. So one of the things I learned is from him is don't rush my decision making. Seek input from all different perspectives, and particularly those that think differently than you do. Mm-hmm. And that has really served me well over the years. And it's been a life lesson as I use in my own career, but also as I work with colleges and work with, you know, as I teach, as I work with some of my staff. Talk to people who disagree with you, or if you have a search committee and you know, you want to put someone who's really not buying into the role, put that person on the search committee and help them find a person with you. You know, really tap into people who think differently.
I love how they or you phrased that, to dribble that ball for a while.
Yeah. That's, and I'm nice. So not a basketball sure. person, but apparently you just dribble that ball for a while. You don't have to pass the ball immediately.
That reminds me, I like to say, I'm going to let that percolate a little bit. That just makes the coffee so much better. But I like to love. That's a wonderful lesson. And I think that you could definitely bring that into so much personally and professionally, or to give that to students. You know. Erica.
I would say mine's a little twofold. It one is patience. I have learned patience. Because, you know, a lot of times we're working on something and you're so ingrained in it and you think you know exactly what the answer should be. And you're ready to go and you're ready to move. But you can't. You have to get, much like Tina said, you've got to get everyone else on the same page as you. You've got to get everybody on the same team, and you're going to have naysayers, and you have to be able to sit down with them, and you have to be able to talk it through. And I've learned in doing that, that even if I think I know the answer, come up with two additional answers. Always have alternatives. And when you're presenting it, then bring them these are the things that we could do. And allow then everyone else to kind of work through their own thought processes, but also help refine some of those other decisions that, you know, the other choices that you've made, because they're actually going to add to it. You know, a lot of the work that I do is very solitary, but at the same time, I can't do it by myself. I have to rely on everybody else. And so being able to bring them, look, this is what I'm thinking, this is what I want to do, or maybe we could do it these ways, allows them to bring additional information and ideas to the table, which gives us the best end result. And I learned, much like Tina, I also had really good help along the way to come to those decisions. There was, when I was at HLC, just a young'un, I worked with Lynn Pretty, who's currently, she's the president of Claremont Lincoln University out in California now. And Lynn was just a force to be reckoned with, but mm-hmm. she could sit down and walk you through, this is why we're doing this way. This is how we're working on this. And this is why we're talking to those people, which a lot of us, especially when we're first starting out in our career, nobody actually ever sits us down and tells us why decisions are being made that way. No one ever really helps you connect those dotted lines. And she actually would take the opportunity. And if she didn't and you asked, you would get that information. And so that's one thing I know I'm always trying to do is connect those things together so that even if we're making one decision over here, I know where it might impact other things, which again goes back to helping me figure out who I need to talk to, who needs to be at the table, and how we make those decisions.
I've never thought of how a really good and inspiring leader or role model, you know, they help you understand the step process that they took to get there. It's a really amazing talent and something that, yeah, would be really helpful for everyone to do. That's, patience, I guess. Yeah.
it's patience. Well, and like Tina knows, when you're working with diverse groups from across campus or across the system, you can't try to rush anything because everybody has their own process. Everybody has their own thought process, their own work that they're doing. And if you rush it, you're not going to get a good quality product out.
So that's great to talk about kind of the lessons you've learned and how you've gotten to this point in your career. But, you know, thinking a bit more about today, what's a challenge you're facing right now? And how are you tackling that challenge?
You know, it's funny. I wouldn't say it's necessarily a challenge, but it is a kind of a larger project. And it's a very, again, patience coming in handy here. It's a very slow project. And it's nobody it's no one's fault or no reason that it's slow. It's just that it requires care. And I had an opportunity in some of the work that I was doing with some of like the professional licensure work and the disclosures around that. I like to check in with the various programs on my campus from time to time, just make sure that they're still happy with how things are working. And one of the things we were talking about, or it was mentioned as an offhanded comment, was the College of Education was working with somebody in the Office of Information Technology on tracking their student teaching. And I said, and I quote, "Ooh, can I get in on that?" Because I thought, you know, if you're tracking student teaching and OIT's helping build something, maybe I can use that to track other experiential learning. Yeah. I only need a small, tiny part of that information. I just need to know where you're going outside of Colorado. Right. But if there's a way to utilize this for larger issues, you know, could I use this for the folks over in audiology to track their clinical placement? Yeah. Is this something that I could work with the law school to track some of their placements? And again, I only need this much, but I know that they might need this much, and it's not going to be that different from program to program. I wonder what we could do. And so I broached the topic with the folks in the College of Ed, like, can I get in on this? And can I talk to your IT person? And they were more than happy. And as soon as I talked to IT, College of Ed said, just keep building ours. We don't want to be in the meetings anymore, which is cool. Mm-hmm. And I broached the topic with one of the programs that does a lot of experiential learning. And I said, what would you think about this? And they were so excited that as soon as they met with the gentleman from OIT, they started sending him spreadsheets.
Oh no!
Like, this is what we need. This is what we want to do. And so we're very slowly going to each of the programs or colleges and saying, look, this is what we're thinking about. This is what we're looking at. I only need it for this, but I thought maybe you might need it for connecting with alumni, connecting with other employers, and, you know, working with career services. What did you all think? So far, the reception has been really great. If this means I can find a way to better track my out-of-state learning placements, and it's the most selfish thing I've ever done, then that's fantastic. My system side says, if this works for us at Boulder, and I've already broached this with a gentleman at OIT who I've been working with, if this works for us, I'd like to roll it out to the other two campuses and give them the opportunity for a single place to put this information, including documentation, and working out ways that we can keep all of the associated signed off pieces together, making it easier for reporting for them. The tiny single Sarah reporting I have to do for me, again, purely selfish. But again, it's not a challenge so much. It's a lot of politicking and a lot of patience to see if this is something that we might be able to do. And, you know, early returns so far say this could be interesting. This could work. So, you know, fingers crossed.
Fingers definitely crossed. That sounds pretty cool. And I don't think it's selfish. If it was selfish, it would have been like, do this for me, and then I'm not going to talk to anybody else about it.
Yeah, pretty much. Oh, I've already told the gentleman that I've been working with in our IT department with, is if this works, you do realize I'm taking you to conferences and I'm going to make you show people what you built.
Yeah.
And then you're going to have to talk to my friends because they're all going to want this.
Oops, sorry.
You know, little things.
Well, there's a lot of synergy there, yeah. Erica, because ours is also the initiative I wanted to talk about is also a very long-term process that requires a lot of patience and collaboration because there's just a lot of pieces that folks from across the system really have input and hold. CCCS, Colorado Community College System, we're undergoing a multi-year transformation of the online consortium. So we're changing from CCC Online to what we're calling Colorado Online at Consortium. And part of it is because of accreditation that CCC Online was one of the only consortium approved by HLC to offer direct instruction on behalf of the colleges. But HLC has some new rules around, relatively 2013, I think, rules around consortial contractual arrangements. And we really didn't neatly fit in either bucket. And so what we've done is we're going to push instruction out to the colleges because many of the colleges have full, mature online learning programs and some really relied on CCC Online to offer online courses for their students on behalf of the college. We, after much consideration, we decided that we are going to make a sustainable model to really position the system for the future, that the instruction will happen at the colleges. So we'll be using instructors and faculty from the home colleges. CCC Online will over time stop doing direct instruction, but we're also going to set up a number of kind of shared matrix services and really behave as a consortium. So things like a single instance of the learning management system. It used to be that we were all on the same system, but we had 14 different instances of it. And as we started to unpack in this endeavor, we said, you know, it might make sense to have one. And so we went through all the stages of change management and really vetted this among layers and layers of conversation with subcommittees and through our natural governance structures up to a steering committee that we should move on to a single instance of the LMS. And that's really been an enabler for a lot of other changes. We also are standing up a shared library service and some shared software, because what we want to do is really level the playing field among our colleges. Some have more resources than others. And so we want to come up with a model where students and colleges, regardless of geography, will have access to courses, information, and opportunities. So we're doing that. We're also looking at collaborative course development, really engaging with the faculty by leveraging the state discipline groups. We have each of the disciplines within Colorado Community College system. The faculty get together and they have discipline groups. So we really want to engage with those faculty to develop what we're calling ready to teach shells, which are a resource for faculty that they can use, but they don't have to create a structure or a shell for their online course. Mm-hmm. We also are working on things like shared technology support. We do have 24/7 support for students, but we also want to scale that out for faculty and instructors. So lots of infrastructure being put into place, lots of use cases. It was interesting to hear you talk about some of the use cases and considerations. But this is a multi-year process, and it's also, change is hard. And so there's a lot that goes into this where we have to really lead with empathy. This is impactful for many people, really working to help them find their next, you know, if there's not a space for them at CCC Online any longer, really helping them find opportunities at our colleges so that the colleges can also experience the great work that they have done, particularly among our faculty, our adjuncts that teach for us. We have over 450 really highly qualified adjuncts at CCC Online. You know, we hope that the colleges will pick those individuals up and leverage them, because we want to grow. So there's enough courses to go around, because at the end of the day, we're putting all of this in place so that we can make a deeper impact and serve more students in Colorado and beyond.
Wow. Well, two big and really interesting projects. It's neat to hear how you're both kind of thinking about those long term and thinking about the patience that needs to go with them and all the people you get to work with.
I mean, that's kind of the fun thing with both what Tina and I both do. Even, you know, it's different, but you really do get to work with everyone. You know, I'm in meetings with people, and it is funny. I'm occasionally in meetings with people where I have no idea who they are. CU Boulder's a big place. And my 1 year anniversary at Boulder was the first day of lockdown. So there are still people that I've never met. Yeah. And I'll be in a meeting and I'm either Googling their name or I'm hitting up a project manager I work with and something else who's been at Boulder much longer. I'm like, do you know what this is? I've been in meetings in the last, you know, 2 months with folks in athletics and folks in the provost's office, the chancellor's office, legal, I'm always in meetings with the registrar's office, financial aid, admissions, bursar, faculty, students. It's so cool that you really do, whatever it is that we're doing, you're touching on everyone.
Yeah, I love that, because it was funny, because when I was talking with my husband this morning about what my day was like, I had a moment of gratitude. I'm like, I get to do so many different things.
Yeah.
Never is any day the same. I get to meet with people across the state. I get to meet with people on a national scale. I get to have this amazing conversation with the two of you. You know, it's just, it is, it's very affirming to be in this space and to be able to live in that world of both of a network system, to be able to work collaboratively.
I used to work with a gentleman that anytime anybody ever complained about what they were doing, he'd look and say, "But are you bored?" No, not bored.
Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, you're both of your roles and what you've described, there's not a lot of positions that would get to have that much reach and really get to see into the different, you know, we always say this, but higher ed can be so siloed and it's hard to get out of your department or your team. And that's pretty neat that you get to meet the other people that are doing pretty amazing work. And I've so loved doing these podcast episodes and able to work on our blog and able to work on our awards, because I get to do that too. I get to talk to people that are doing such different things, and it's really affirming. Okay, so we're winding down, but I have two final questions for you guys. What's a productivity hack for people working today to get things done?
Mine's probably going to sound a little controversial at first, but hear me out.
We'll hang in there with you.
Hang in there. It is a productivity hack. And because I like to come at any new challenge that comes at me with the reminder that nothing that I'm doing is new. None of this is new. Somebody has done something, or at the very least, I can take the problem, get up to that 30,000 foot view and see where the similarities are across other things on campus or other things in the system. You know, I have to do X. Well, they've done X squared. Okay, so where are the similarities? And is there something I can bounce off of? Is it at least going to give me an idea to start with? Is this going to help me understand where it exists? The one thing I, you know, anytime I come up with I get a challenge, it's presented to me or something new, a new project. It's not new. It's just not something I've done before. Let's see what exists and then go from there and make it my own. It's not a hack necessarily. It's more of it's part of my planning process. It really is. It's part of my planning process. It's very much a, let me take a deep breath. You know, we started, CU Boulder has stackable credentials that are, you can stack certificates and build a master's degree.
Oh, okay.
Well, I've been a registrar. When we were met with some of the business process issues that come with along with something like that and working with a third party LMS, it turns into, okay, where are the similarities to what we would consider a traditional degree? Where are the differences and how different are those differences? You know, what could we learn from the traditional to apply here, and where do we have to deviate, and how do we do this without making it look that different to the students?
The stuff you have to figure out is really the deviations. You've already got kind of the template.
Exactly. And again, it goes back to the, you know, how different is this deviation, or is it just something that we think is different because we've no experience doing something like this, or I mean, we do now. Just because it's new to us doesn't mean it's new.
I like that. It's so definitely a productivity hack. Yeah.
It makes it a lot more calm when you're able to sit back and say, someone else has gone through this before.
Whereas you widened the aperture and kind of zoomed out. My productivity hack really kind of, but it's kind of interesting that calmness is kind of the common theme here. Mine really zooms in. I don't know if you've ever heard of the Pomodoro technique. So one of the things that I love about the Pomodoro, besides the visual image of the tomato egg timer that it's named after, but it's where you set a timer to work on a task for 25 minutes uninterrupted. So you turn off your email, you focus only, timer goes off, and you intentionally take a break. And then you come back and you do another sprint. For me, I love that because it really forces me to focus and really enables that intentional work, because I have a tendency to, because I like the variety, the nature that I all the things that I get to work with, there's time I really have to be focused, and I do my best work when I have the ability to attend to one thing rather than trying to divide my attention. And so I have found by taking that Pomodoro technique and setting a timer, they have apps for it now, it's no longer the egg timer, that you set a timer and you just write, or you just read, or you just compose that email or that correspondence, or work on that Gantt chart or that budget in that sprint. And then over time, you can make those sprints longer. So they do recommend you start at 25 minutes, but you can extend for a full hour but take those breaks and stand up and allow yourself to get into a different mind space before you emerge back in.
You know, I think we deal with so many distractions now. You know, I was just thinking even through my watch kept binging. My phone, I have it on silent, but it's still like the screen comes on and then Slack and then Messenger and email. And it's just like, oh, you just turn all that off and give my attention to what we're doing, get some real good work done. Oh, great. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing, both of you. Did you guys have anything else you wanted to add to the podcast before I ask our final?
Honestly, other than just saying, you know, thank you to you and your colleagues at WCET and WCET SAN. For the award in the first place, which I thought was awesome. And it's so nice to actually get to meet Tina. I mean, we had met before, we've been in similar circles for years. And it's funny, you had mentioned somebody from Regis, and all I could think was, that's a name I haven't heard in forever. So no, but thank you. This was fantastic. And it's so nice to be a part of this community.
Same, you know, I think one of the things, you know, the community of practice, so much of what we are able to do, it's never just about any one individual. It's all of us together. And I think the stories that I'm hearing with Erica, really, it's true that so much of the work that CU and Colorado, it's interesting, the whole Colorado thing, it just kind of occurred to me, but the Colorado state system, or the Colorado, University of Colorado system, and the Colorado Community College system, you know, so much of what we're able to accomplish is because we do this work together. And the work that we do is just informed by our community of practice with organizations like WCET and others that, you know, really kind of help propel us all together. I was having a conversation this morning with someone about how tight our, you know, although there's so many of us in this space, just so much common ground and so much synergy that we can create with our colleagues. It's amazing. So thank you to Lindsay and to everyone at WCET for this honor. It's humbling.
We're just excited to be able to share with the community what you guys have learned and help others. So thank you too. We talked a little bit about this before, but since this is a education focused community, we like to try and discuss a little bit with our guests something new that you've learned this week or recently. It can be something related to your work life, your professional life, more productivity hacks, something like that. I'll go first. I'll volunteer myself. I attempted to make risotto for the first time. I actually made it twice. The first time it went super well. And I loved it, and it was enjoyable. We are dairy free in this household, so unfortunately, it didn't have creamy Parmesan loveliness added. But so then I made it the second time when my in-laws were here, and it was absolute mush. What I learned from that was maybe be a little bit more patient and practice more before I want to impress people. I don't know, but it was still fun, and I love cooking. So anytime I can learn something new with cooking is really fun. You guys are comfortable. Would you like to share something new you've learned?
Yeah. And I'm laughing because we talked about it before we started recording. I will say though, as far as cooking and cooking something new is concerned, I did cook beef Wellington for the first time the other day. Wow. And it did turn out really well. You know, there's some things I'll tweak the next time I do it, but it was shockingly easy. Again, read the directions and realize you've probably done all of the techniques in it before.
Hey, there you go.
But now I know, right? Tying it back. But no, I saw this on Instagram this morning and I shared it with a friend of mine with the line of, please don't think I'm an absolute moron, but this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. I wish I had thought of this. Somebody was at a diner and they took those little square gold butter packets and they stabbed it with a fork and then they flipped it over and they took the fork out, obviously. And then they were able to get the butter out in these neat little like noodles, made it much easier to spread on the bread. And all I could think was, this is genius. How did I never think of this in college? With all that time we spent in diners over the years and in graduate school, like how did I not do this? You know, I'm mesmerized by it. And now all I want to do is go to a diner and try it. And it's all I've been able to think about all day.
I was hoping you would share it again because I am also impressed. And
it was so cool.
The process improvement that no one had thought of. Well, I love it.
Sorry to raise the bar like that on you, Tina. But
no. So mine's really kind of boring compared to those two. Although I have to say with risotto, the key I learned is stirring. I usually run out of stirring patience because risotto takes a lot of stirring. And I want to find out how to make beef Wellington at high altitude because like I've tried popovers and I could never get a rise out of them. Anyway, so what I'm doing this week is I started a Coursera course out of Australia on storytelling in the workplace. So I'm looking forward to, it's week one, but I'm looking forward to learning how to tell better stories to craft a message and create impact. When I finish and get my Coursera certificate, I'll share what I've learned. But it's kind of cool. I thought I want to be a better storyteller.
That's really cool. And to end up using the stories in the workplace, that's pretty neat.
Yeah.
I might have to look into that too. We're all about lifelong learning.
Right. Whether it's
crafting messages or creating culinary masterpieces or improving your dining experience. Well, again, thank you. Yes. This was so fun. And I really, really enjoyed learning from both of you and chatting with both of you. And hope our listeners, I know they enjoyed it too. So thank you again. We'll talk to you later.